Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for listening to the latest episode of Borders Blatherings, the podcast where Mary Craig and I have a good old natter and shine a light on the curious, shadowy, and magical history of the Scottish Borderlands. Mary, good morning.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm good. And you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Yeah. I'm going to start today with two very quick-fire questions for you.
Okay.
Number one, when is a door not a door?
Hey, when is a jar?
When is a jar,
hey.
Yeah. Number two, when is a racist not a racist?
I refuse to answer that on the grounds of my incriminating myself.
Can I answer it for you?
Yes.
When he or she gives £15 million to the Conservative Party.
Oh.
Now, I didn't say that to be trite. Looking back recently at some of the podcasts we've done in the past, I re-listened to the podcast we did on Frederick Douglass.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to echo the unequivocal message he gave to the Free Church of Scotland,
mm-hmm.
who were taking money from slave owners. And that message was simple. Return the money.
Send back the money.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
Politicking over.
Mm-hmm.
Onto history.
Great.
But a recent news story that I thought you may have come across. Have you come across this relatively recent news story where two skeletons were unearthed locally at Jedburgh Abbey?
Oh, yes.
And they have been, or are to be, sent up to the National Museum of Scotland for scientific and medical research mm-hmm. purposes. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a good intro. Bodies unearthed.
Yes.
To the second part of our podcast. So this is part two of the podcast we're calling the Romany Gypsy Field of Blood.
The Field of Blood, indeed, yes.
We could start probably with a quick recap of episode one.
Mm-hmm.
There. Shall you do that? Or shall I?
6 2/3. Uh-huh. We had the Fas and the Shaws fighting each other.
Yeah.
Two of the Fas are killed. One is very seriously wounded.
Uh-huh.
Four of the Shaws up to Edinburgh, found guilty, hanged and buried. And then one of the bodies disappears out the grave.
Yeah, the four who'd been hanged.
Indeed.
Were just basically dumped into one big grave in Greyfriars Churchyard.
And the youngest boy, who was
went
about 16,
last,
went
I
in
remember.
Last.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Now, there are two theories abroad here. One is, and I can't quite get my head around it, that he somehow rose from the grave, broke mm-hmm. out, bribed the guard, and escaped.
Yes, extremely unlikely. There were people who were hanged who survived because the hangman
Indeed.
Hadn't done his job.
Yeah.
But for a boy who would have been stripped of all of his clothing to come out of the grave completely naked, why is the guard not going to raise the alarm? Because he hasn't got anything to bribe the guard
yeah.
with.
The kirkyard's
yeah.
locked.
The kirkyard's locked. It's got big gates. There's a night watchman there.
Yeah.
No. And from what I have read from historians of resurrectionists, that is considered to be a grave robbing situation, that the resurrectionists have gone and they've bribed the night watch to look the other way, or maybe he was part of it, maybe he tipped them off, there was a fresh body, who knows.
Yeah.
But anyway, our poor young boy, Patrick or Alexander, whatever his first name was, when he was a Shaw, certainly.
This is a 15, 16-year-old kid, so...
Yes.
My money's on.
I think so.
Grave
yeah.
robbers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And off he went up to the university
uh-huh.
to be dissected.
Yeah. Now, many of the people listening to us talking today will be familiar with Mrs. Burke and Hare. There have been movies made about Burke and Hare, and anyone who visit any tourist who visits Edinburgh is invited to go on a tour and relive that whole story of the infamous Burke and Hare. Question for you. Any evidence of grave robbing or resurrection down here in the Scottish Borders?
Absolutely, yes.
Ah.
So let's start with the resurrectionists and then come back to the terrible twosome of Burke and Hare.
Uh-huh.
But certainly the resurrectionists, yes. And now I'm going to do something I seldom do, is I'm going to throw some dates at you.
Oh, my word.
I have a little bit of paper because, as everybody knows, I'm hopeless on dates. So I have a little bit of paper here. So here we go with, in 1506...
Oh, that early.
James IV of Scotland
yes.
gave royal patronage to the barber surgeons of Edinburgh, allowing them to dissect the bodies of certain executed criminals. So as far back as 1506.
Now, James IV was, if you go to the Surgeon's Hall up in Edinburgh, James IV did have rather a keen eye on medical advancement.
He did, too,
very much
yes.
into alternative medicines and so on and so forth. Yeah.
So that's as early as we have.
Okay.
We then have our situation in 1678 with our young gypsy lad. But in 1694, Edinburgh City Council allowed anatomists to dissect corpses found dead in the street and the bodies of such as die violent deaths who shall have nobody to own them. So even the victims of crime could be dissected. Then in 1721, we have contracts issued by the Edinburgh College of Surgeons to include a clause directing their students not to be involved in exhuming bodies. And that students who had done so would be reprimanded. And the very fact that they had to put this clause in means that that's what the students were getting up to. I mean, I know students get up to a lot. I've been a student myself, but come on.
So that was a student prank in those days. Never mind traffic cones on statues.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
In the 1720s, the unauthorised removal of bodies from graveyards had become commonplace because what had happened was there had been a change in the law. So the number of crimes for which you could be executed had dropped. So there was a shortage of bodies.
There's going to be a shortage.
Supply and demand here, folks.
Yeah.
And then in 1828, of course, we have the famous case of Burke and Hare. So even though our gypsy lad went missing in 1678, grave robbing, resurrectioning, whatever you want to call it, yes, it happened. And it happened here in the Borders as well as up in Edinburgh. And it happened in the Borders quite markedly. As time went on, it happened even more and more in the Borders. Well into sort of 1750 up to about 1800, simply because there are more night watchmen in Edinburgh. The graveyards are overlooked by tenements in Edinburgh.
Yeah, yeah.
The city merchants were building watchtowers and they were paying private night watchmen to keep an eye on things. And the great and the good in Edinburgh, as they always do, of course, built mort safes.
These are the
huge
cages.
Railings
that lock over
and cages,
the graves.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're a grave robber and you think, well, I could go into Edinburgh and I could nick out, and I'm going to get caught there, I'm going to get yelled at, I'm going to get shouted at, and the Kirk of Scotland, my favourite bogeyman, the Kirk of Scotland, is going to start shouting at me. Is it not just easier to just, you know, get on a horse and cart and go down to Gallows Hills? Or go down to Jedburgh?
Mm-hmm.
Go down to Hoyt?
Yeah.
And that's what they did. From about 1750 up to about 1800, there are numerous occasions where there are bodies going missing.
And what's interesting here is this practice, because of its potential of medical advance, it's been enshrined in law and contracts are being agreed to give certain people the permission to go ahead with the resurrection.
Well, surgeons have been dissecting bodies since antiquity. And it's one of these things where the only way to learn how to do it is to do it. You know, I mean, it's a huge thing to take a knife to another person in cold blood.
Yeah.
If you want to find out you know, how the body works so that you can then cure the body, so you can then remove an appendix or a diseased organ. The only way to do it is to practice on bodies. And very few people will donate their body to medical science for that purpose. I mean, people do now. People obviously donate their organs and whatever. And as I say, if I ever get to being a little old lady, they can have me when I pop my clogs and baby surgeons can slice me up all they want. I won't care. But it was very heavily frowned upon because, of course, as the Church of Scotland said, when the end of days comes, in the sure and certain hope of the resurrection of the body, so you have to have your body there for God to resurrect you. And so they absolutely railed against this. But of course, being the Church of Scotland, they didn't give a monkey's about the poor and the destitute and if you were a criminal. So, oh yeah, you can slice up those bodies. We don't care about those. And they actually wanted things enshrined in the law, because what they wanted was, they wanted nice, you know, Edinburgh merchants to be quite safely in their graves. But, you know, if you're the poor filleth, or you can get sliced up. So that was why the Church actually pushed for regulations.
And
so the great, the good would be safe.
I'm thinking of the vocabulary here. Body snatcher. Resurrectionist. Does the Church have a hand in this kind of rebranding? Because they seem to have different value tones, these two terms.
The Church wanted people to be called resurrectionists because it was so offensive when you would regularly talk about, you know, at the burial service, you'd see in the sure and certain hope of the resurrection. They would do that deliberately to say, this is how terrible they are. They're breaking God's law. So as I say, you've got all of that pressure going on. And so people just sauntered down to the borders and picked up a body here and a body there. It tended to happen more in winter than summer, because obviously it's easier to keep a body fresh in the cold.
Refrigeration is not that far advanced in those days.
We should have said at the beginning of this episode is not for the faint-hearted. So seriously, folks, if discussions about corpses and dead bodies and cadavers is not for you, this is not the episode for you. But yes, if you have somebody who is buried at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and you then dig them up at 2 o'clock at night and stick them onto a cart and then trail them all the way from Jedburgh up to Edinburgh, it might be, you know, you're wanting to get them up to Edinburgh as quickly as possible. How they got them through the city gates, I'm not quite sure. I think there was a bit of bribery going there.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And then they would be delivered up to the university up in Edinburgh. The problem was that the Edinburgh Anatomist School was famous right the way across Europe. There were people who were doing their degrees at Oxford and they would come up to Edinburgh for anatomy class. There were people that were doing their degrees in the Sorbonne that came across to Edinburgh for the anatomy
Edinburgh
classes.
Edinburgh and Ingolstadt in Germany were the two main centres for medical advancement.
Yes. These were the two. And what you tended to get in Edinburgh was you had the surgeons who were connected to the university, you had the surgeons who were connected to the Barber Surgeons College, and you had, this is going to sound a little gruesome, freelancers. Freelancers who will sell tickets for a dissection. So if you're a student, you're going to go along and your professor's going to dissect one body a week. That's your anatomy class, as it were. But if you know that one of the freelancers is also going to do a dissection, maybe say on the Wednesday, you think, oh, I could nip along to that as well, have another go at that, I'll have another look at that. So there was a real demand for bodies. And of course, the better the lecture, the more demand for the bodies. And I mean, the infamous one in Edinburgh was Dr. Robert Knox, who had his students, and he sold tickets for any member of the public who wanted to come along and have a look at a body. And of course, remember, even if you don't like a dissection, if you are of a certain persuasion, you might get the body of a nice young girl to look at. You get to look at a naked body before it's dissected, because of course, the body is laid out, the body is stripped naked, and the doctor does his little speech, you know, the surgeon does his little speech, and this is what we're going to do, and you can see this as a young female. So if you actually all you wanted to do was go and ogle at a lassie's body, you could do that.
And did Conan Doyle study under Knox?
I don't know if that's... I'm not sure that that's confirmed.
You can see the origins of Sherlock Holmes
I think Conan Doyle was a little bit later than Knox. Yeah. I'd have to check up on that one, but there's also Dr. Bell that he worked because Knox
that
was earlier, wasn't he?
Yeah.
It was Erin Bell. But yes, there were certainly resurrectionists down in the borders. There were problems in places like Jedburgh. Although obviously Hoyt and Gala are the bigger towns.
Yes.
It tended to be the smaller towns you would go to because you're going to have, one, maybe two night watchmen in Jedburgh. And they're not going to be keeping an eye in the graveyard. They're looking at the high street. They're looking for people coming out drunk, fighting in the streets or coming out the pub or breaking into a house. Mm-hmm. You're not tending to go to the graveyard. You know, because there's going to be a drunk out in the main street every Saturday night.
Every Saturday.
Whereas there's not going to be a grave robber in the graveyard every Saturday night. So this is why a lot of bodies did go missing. And there are quite a few of the old graveyards in the borders. If you go around, there are still mortsafes there.
Yeah, I've come across many. And in Edinburgh itself, there's still quite a few of the old watchtowers
still there. Colton Cemetery in particular is a really good example.
By the way, and out of interest, have you ever been to, there's a German guy whose name has escaped me at the moment, but he has had, I think, 4 touring exhibitions called Körperwelt, which is Corpse World. And people in Germany will sign over their corpse to him.
Oh, yes, he's sort of an artist.
And you mentioned this episode may not necessarily be for the squeamish, and they put on one of his exhibitions at the Modern Art Gallery in Edinburgh. And I remember some controversy surrounding that. It was split into 2 parts, and the council had decided that children under the age of 16 could only enter 1 part.
Yes, yes.
Which caused a bit of confusion in terms of those who wish to educate people a little bit more.
It's very curious that we all have a body, and yet we are incredibly squeamish about our bodies.
Yeah.
It's really odd, and I include myself in that. Uh-huh. I'm an absolute big baby whenever I go to get my eyes examined at the optician's. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but anything to do with eyes, I'm an absolute big baby about it. I don't know what it is. You know, because, you know, this is the body I inhabit. You'd think I'd want to know as much about it as possible to keep it in as good condition as possible. So that's the glass of wine tonight out the window. But you know what I mean? You'd think we would want to know as much as possible and how it works.
Yep.
Isn't it fascinating? And it's the wonder of evolution and, you know, all of these things. And yet, the minute there's anything, we're a bit sort of, I don't know, I don't want to see that, or I don't want to know about that.
Yeah.
It's a curious part of our human psyche.
Yeah, I've seen 2 of those exhibitions, and the one that we saw in Brussels, when we lived in Brussels, it was linked to physical sporting activity, and one sees muscles and tendons. You really got a feel for what the body goes through in certain endeavours. But I guess if you were of the squeamish variety, it would be a bit of a challenge. Anywho.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Back to Mrs. Burke and
Oh, right, Air. Yes.
You've informed me now that there was a bit of activity going on down here.
Absolutely.
In the Borders. But for those listening to this episode, Burke and Hare will be the two people they know best.
Yes.
So what can you tell me about Mrs. Burke and Hare?
They were not resurrectionists. They were not grave robbers.
Uh-huh.
They were serial killers.
Uh-huh.
So that's point number one. Let's get that sorted
let's
out
get that
straight
sorted out.
Away. And I do not know why. Well, I do know why. Because at the time, graves are being robbed and because of how they disposed of the bodies. So Burke and Hare, William Burke, both originally from Ireland, came across to Scotland, and they met when they were both working as navvies on the Union Canal.
So that's a connection to another podcast, the navvies.
However, William Burke was quite an educated chap.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was brought up Catholic. He spoke English and Irish, both fluently, quite well educated. He'd also been educated in Presbyterianism, and for reasons known best to himself, he converted to the Kirk of Scotland. Why anybody would do that? I'm sorry, Kirk of Scotland. I'm
there
just
you go again.
Yeah, exactly. It keeps me happy. Anyway, actually, when he first comes across to Scotland, he gets himself a job in Peebles.
Now, there's something I did not know.
There's a little Borders connection for
uh-huh.
you. So he gets himself a job in Peebles. Ah. He's working, he's literate.
Uh-huh.
He's charming. He's quite good looking. He's a good singer. He's reputedly a good dancer. Very charming, can charm the ladies. He's got various skills, one of which is as a cobbler. But he can't seem to find settled work. And of course, he's Irish in Scotland. And, you know, we're not mm-hmm. quite at the famine of the dirty Irish state yet, but we're not happy.
Yeah, yeah.
So he goes up to work on the Union Canal and he meets William Hare. And the two of them sort of become friends and they float up to Edinburgh, where Hare is almost the opposite of Burke. He's not as good looking, can he sing, can he dance. He has got a very gruff manner. He is very quick to temper.
Uh-huh.
He's violent. He's not pleasant. He's not a pleasant character at all. He's absolutely not a pleasant character at all. So him and his, now, was it his wife? Was it his Bideon? Was it just his girlfriend? Who knows? Anyway, he and his Bideon, Margaret, the two of them have a boarding house in the Westport of Edinburgh. When I say a boarding house, not a nice boarding house with a nice landlady that gives you a lovely cooked breakfast in the morning. It's basically a doss house for folk that are on the edge, really on the edge.
Yeah.
And these people come in and they pay a few pounds. So it starts off where they had an elderly man. So the four of them, Burke, Hare, and their two partners are in this boarding house. And unfortunately, one of the guests dies in the night owing £4 rent.
Ah, so I knew rent arrears was going to come in here. Yeah.
He has no family. He has nothing in his pockets because they checked. His clothes are maybe worth a few shillings, if that.
Yep.
They don't know what to do. However, at this time, it is a well-known fact that if you nick a body out of a grave, you can sell it up to one of the doctors at Edinburgh University.
And you're going to make much more than the rent there is.
See?
Yeah.
So this is why, this is the connection with grave robbing.
Uh-huh.
So they think, oh, well, that's fine. So they get a coffin. And the local undertaker comes along with a coffin. The old boy, I think his name was Donald, he gets put in the coffin. The undertaker says, I have to go away, but I'll come back and bury him later. While the undertaker goes away, they tip the old boy out the coffin, load it up with a whole load of rubbish so it's the same weight. Then shove him in a tea chest and cart him up to Edinburgh University. They stop a student and say, "Excuse me, we've got a dead body. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us where to go to sell it?" And the student says, "Oh, I went around to Dr. Knox. He'll give you a good price for it." "I went to Glasgow University. We would not have done that. I'm telling you, it's just Edinburgh University. I'm going to go out there." "This would never have happened at Glasgow. I defy anybody to tell me this would have happened at Edinburgh University." So this student's now waiting at him. So they go round to Dr. Knox, pitch up. He has a look at the body and says, "Oh, there you go.
8 quid.
8 quid. He's like, "Oh, come on." So they go home. So the heirs have got the rent arrears paid off. And then the rest of the money, they split between them. I mean, that was quite good, that. You know, I mean, the doctor didn't even, you know, bat an eyelid that we pitched up with this old boy. So that's quite good, eh? So they went out and had a wee drink to celebrate the fact that, you know, they'd got some money out of it. And they realised that they didn't really actually even have to do anything. I mean, all we had to do was literally carry him up the hill to the university. So I thought, I wonder if we could do that again.
Yeah, of course.
So they had to look at a few of their other guests, none of whom obliged them by popping their clogs. I mean, they're so inconsiderate, these guests. None of them died. And they went, "Oh, that's no fun, is it?" So they sort of hung about for a week or two, waiting for somebody to die. But as I say, nobody obliged them. So they thought, we'll just help them on their way, eh? Because they're a bit sort of, you know, they're all a bit, you know, they're a bit elderly and they're a bit ill and they're a bit this and they're a bit that.
Yeah, they're taking people in who are way down on the list.
Exactly. Yeah, nobody's going to miss them. What's the they're going to die anyway. We were all going to die anyway. We're just hurrying it along a little bit.
Yeah.
So they developed.
Why am I laughing at this one?
They sort of developed this method whereby they grab the poor soul. Hair lies across the person's legs and pins their arms down to stop them struggling. And Burke puts his big hand over their mouth and nose and suffocates them. And they call it doing a Burke. They actually give it a name, right? Then they take the body, and depending on the time of day, they either stuff it under the bed, to wait for things to calm down, or they just trot up the hill to Dr. Knox and say, "We've got another one." And Dr. Knox says, "Oh, right, fair enough."
Yep.
But this time they're turning up at Dr. Knox's house. They're not even bothering to go to university now. They're just traipsing up the road to Dr. Knox's house. Mm. And they're getting between £7 and £10 a pop for the bodies. Now, this is about £1,000 today. But allowing for, you know, the different ways people were paid and the quality of living and the standard of living, it's probably the equivalent of about £2,000. Which isn't a lot of money, but then again, it's not a lot of work. It's literally not a lot of work.
No,
you're
really
taking somebody. They then refined their method even more, whereby the person would be plied with whiskey. And hopefully that would render them so they're not going to fight and they're going to be half, you know, half asleep or stupid. And they just keep on going and keep on going and keep on going. And in the space of 11 months, they managed to murder at least 16 people. Now, I've never been in the body snatching business, nor am I a doctor. However, if somebody was pitching up at my door with 16 bodies in the space of 11 months, I think I'd be a little bit suspicious.
You would think so, yeah.
Especially when one of the bodies, for example, was a well-known young Edinburgh prostitute. They pitched up with her. Her body was so pretty that Knox displayed it for ages before he dissected it. When the body was brought in, one of his assistants went, "Oh, wait a minute, I know her. I was with her the other night." And Knox went, "No, you weren't. Shut up." They do in a grandmother and her 10-year-old deaf-mute grandson. And Knox doesn't seem to balk at this. When they do Daft Jamie, as he was known, and Daft Jamie was a lad who may have had a learning difficulty. And he was known around Edinburgh. He was quite distinctive looking. He had a club foot. And he was a bit, you know, he was a dance about in the streets. But everybody liked him and everybody knew Daft Jamie. The bump off poor Daft Jamie, don't know why they picked on him, but they did. He gets taken up to Knox, and again, one of his assistants says, but that's daft, Jamie, and Knox says...
There'll be a character around.
No, it's not, and promptly chops off the head and the foot to avoid detection. This keeps on going and keeps on going. Now, Burke and Hare are having a rare old time with this. They've got money all over the place.
Yeah.
At one point, they have a falling out because they may or may not have done a murder without the other one doing the proceedings. The situation with the prostitute, another prostitute might have been in bed with one of them, or one of them might have been trying to get the prostitute in bed, so that causes a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And they just keep on going and keep on going. Until they're actually caught because they find an old Irish lady called Margaret Doherty. And they pretend that they're distantly related. Oh, that was my mother's maiden name, Doherty. You know, this was Burke with his usual charm.
Mm-hmm.
And they invite the poor old lady back to the lodging house. And they want to bump her off. Unfortunately, there's another couple staying there, the Greys, who are they are absolutely the heroes of this piece, the Grey couple. He's an ex-soldier. And it takes them ages, but they finally get the Greys to leave the house. At which point they ply the old lady with drink and bump her off.
Mm.
The Greys come back to the lodging house the next morning. And Hare is acting really strangely. He's wandering about the place, throwing whiskey on the floor, out the bottle. And they said, what on earth are you doing that for? And he said, I'm making room in the bottle. Which is the oddest thing I've ever heard anybody say. I've never known an Irishman or a Scotsman throw drink away. Why would you not drink the drink? I don't understand that at all. At one point, Mrs. Grey tries to go over to collect, I think it's her stockings or something, and they sort of push her out the room. So they're not quite sure what's going on.
No.
So they go back to their room and sit there. There's something going on.
Sure.
The Burkes and the Hares go out. So the Greys decide to be nosy, and good for them.
Well done.
Back into the room, had a look around, and there under the straw is poor old Mrs. Doherty. They're terrified. They run out the house. They're running up to try and find a policeman. And they're caught by Margaret Hare, who takes them to the pub and says to them that she'll pay them £5 a week not to say anything.
Oh, my word. Oh, my word.
And they're like, absolutely not. No.
Hmm?
So they finally find the police. The police go to the house. This time, Margaret Doherty is already up in Dr. Knox's. The police know they've got a missing old lady.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know it's definitely a death, but there's a missing old lady. And the Burkes and the Hares are acting so suspiciously that the police are going, yes, something's going on. So they try to think, okay, there's no body. What would they do? How would they get rid of a body? And lo and behold, the police thought to themselves, Dr. Knox, if there's a body gone missing, that's where it will be.
Yeah.
So up they go, and Dr. Knox is sort of, no, you can't come in, go away. And, you know, like you see it on the telly, have you got a warrant? The police are like, oh, shut up. They go in, into his back workroom, and there's old Mrs. Doherty already laid out on the slab. And so everybody is arrested. And when I say everybody, I mean the two Burkes and the two Hares. They're arrested. Dr. Knox is not arrested. Oh, no. No, he's not arrested. Because he hasn't broken any laws.
Mm-hmm.
It is not illegal for him to buy a body. It's not illegal for him to acquire bodies. He's not doing anything illegal by selling tickets to his anatomy lectures. He's broken no laws.
It's the same as the world today. The defence of, I haven't broken the law.
You haven't broken the law.
Morals, ethics, who cares?
So the Burkes and the Hares are put on trial. But they have a problem because they've only got the body of Margaret Doherty.
Mm.
All the other victims have been dissected. So there's no evidence. The other problem you have, and I don't know if this is particular to Scots law or to other judiciaries, if all four of them blame each other, how do you prove who killed the old lady?
Yeah.
So you're stuck.
Mm-hmm.
So the lawyers have only one choice. They have to get one of them to turn King's evidence against the other.
Yeah.
Now, that means that person's going to get immunity.
Yeah.
but there's nothing else they can do.
Uh-huh.
We also have the situation of Mrs. Burke and Mrs. Hare cannot, under the law at that time, give evidence against their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
So they're no use as witnesses. So you've got to get either Burke or
Hare.
So
one has to turn against the other. Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, we know that it's going to be Hare because he's the one with the nasty personality. He's
like, yep.
You want all the details? I'll tell you everything we did. Promise me I'm not going to get hanged. Mm-hmm. Fine. And he does.
And he spills the beans.
He spills the beans about everything, which is why we have all of the detail that we have.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point, I think his first defence, when they were first questioned, he said, I don't know what you're talking about the body. Then he tried, a big boy done it and ran away. He said, a man came all dressed in black and he wanted, no, sorry, this was Burke's excuse, was a big boy done it and ran away. A man came who wanted his shoes cobbled. Burke said he would cobble his shoes and the man said, I've got a chest, can I leave it with you for a couple of hours? Burke said, yes. He went away. Burke was suspicious, looked in and said, saw there was a dead body
dead
and
body.
Said to the man, please take that away. And the man did it. He took the body away, so big boy done it and ran away. Then we had Hare done it on his own. Then he had, you know, we had every excuse under the book. But Hare spills the beans about everything.
Mm.
What is really poignant when you read what Hare said is that there are some of the victims, he didn't even remember their names.
Oh,
I know we're laughing earlier and it is ridiculous and absurd, but some of these people, we don't even know what their names were. And they met this horrible, horrible death by people that they thought were being nice to them and offered them a glass of whiskey. And then their bodies are dissected and gawked at by everybody. You know, it's just awful.
It's a free market for you.
So Hare turns King's evidence. Burke is found guilty. Both the women are found not proven.
Yeah, Scottish thing. Yeah.
And Burke is hanged. In Edinburgh, in front of a crowd of 25,000.
Mm.
There were people renting out rooms so that you could have a better look of it. And who was in the crowd watching this?
Don't say it was Knox.
Sir Walter Scott.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Walter Scott was there and wrote about it, and wrote about the crowd and the bloodlust of the crowd and the fact that he himself felt as if he wished he could put his hands round his throat. And he also felt the anger of the fact that Hare had got away with it.
Yeah.
That Hare had literally walked free.
Mm.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
So Burke is hanged, but the judge in the case was, I'm not quite sure what to make of the judge. The judge says, you know, you've been found guilty of these murders, you're going to be hanged by the neck until you be dead, you know, the usual thing. And then he said, and I think we should make an exhibition of you. I'm paraphrasing somewhat. I think we should have you exhibited. Your body should be exhibited as a sort of, you know, a testament to all as to how wicked you are.
Mm-hmm.
And your body should be flayed. And this should happen, and that should happen. And it did.
Yeah.
After Burke died, he was publicly dissected, the tickets for which went through the roof.
Mm.
I don't know who got the money for that. He was dissected. His skin was flayed off his body. And then the surgeon who performed the dissection, whose name I can't remember, I'm really annoyed, wrote in a notebook in his blood and said, I am writing this in the blood of Burke, which I've taken from his head. And that notebook was bound in his skin. And his skeleton is to this day still on exhibition in the medical department of Edinburgh University.
And I've seen... should I call it a wallet or a purse? I've seen some goods that were actually made from his flailed skin. Yeah.
Hare is kept in prison for a wee whiley.
Uh-huh.
Both the women have to flee for their lives because the crowd is going to absolutely lynch them.
Sure.
They disappear off. Hare is kept in prison for quite a while and then they have to think what to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they release him, he's going to get murdered.
Yeah.
They know this.
Yeah.
So They send him all the way to Dumfries in a coach, in disguise. Unfortunately for him, sitting opposite him in the coach is a lawyer who worked on the case.
Oh.
Who sits there going, keeping his mouth shut all the way until they get to Dumfries and then told everybody in Dumfries who he was. So he gets rescued by the Dumfries police. And then they say, what on earth are we going to do with him? So they set him on the road to Annan and they say to him, get yourself over into England. Get yourself across the border and do that. However, if one can think of the geography of Scotland, if you go south from Annan, you do indeed go to England. If you go directly north, you go to Moffat. If you go to northeast, where do you end up? In the Scottish borders.
In the borders, yeah.
And there are numerous sightings of hare in the Scottish borders for about a year, 2 years afterwards that are pretty credible sightings before he disappears and it's thought that he either ended up back in Ireland or across in Australia.
Maybe Australia. Yeah.
But he certainly wandered about. But Dr. Knox, as I say, was not put on trial. There was a little commission into his behaviour, which was fine, and you would want a commission into his behaviour. The trouble was that he was able to decide who was going to investigate him, which seems a little bit odd.
That's a surprise.
Well, you know. And so the commission sort of said, well, you shouldn't really, you know, come on, you should have sort of known what was going on. And he said, well, no, I didn't, because I just thought, you know, they were really lucky. And I mean, well, they were, you know, they live in that part of Edinburgh with the poor and the destitute. Yep. And I think he said something more or less along the lines of, well, would you rather that they had robbed graves? You know, would you rather they were in Edinburgh robbing the graves of the great and the good? And I'm thinking, well, no, but I don't want them killing people either.
It's an interesting defence because they become known as grave robbers, though they didn't really do that.
It was far too much. It actually was really difficult to go back to grave robbing for a minute.
Yeah.
It's actually really... First of all, you need to know that somebody's been hanged. Okay, somebody is hanged. You need to know what graveyard they're in.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know the guard there or the night watchman that you can bribe. You need to know how to access it. You need to turn up at 2 o'clock in the morning when nobody's noticing. You have to dig down 6 feet of dirt, prise open a coffin, pull a body out, stick it on the back of the cart, take it back to wherever it is. It's a hard night's work.
Yeah.
Working here, we're never going to do that. Pair of lazy so-and-so, there was no way they were going to do that. Whereas you get somebody sozzled on whiskey who is already elderly or ill or underweight because of, you know, poverty, and two grown men lying top of you, you can kill that person in 20 minutes rather than 3 hours to dig up a body. Pair of lazy so-and-sos. But anyway, that was sort of Knox's defence. It sort of came out as a fudge, the report.
It leaves a bad taste.
But
he
was very much shunned by the medical establishment
in
Edinburgh.
That was the next question, his reputation.
And within several years, he disappears off. He does a little bit of lecturing in England and across the mainland Europe and then settles down in London and works for about another 10, 15 years in London and dies in his bed with his boots on. Now, there are 2 points. One is a positive and one is a negative about Knox. One of the positives is that the money he raised from his dissections went towards another completely different area of work that he worked on, which was the development of incubators. Very early development of incubators, in which he was a pioneer. Now, I was a premature baby. If I had not been put in an incubator, I would have died. So, if Knox hadn't taken the bodies and dissected them and sold the money, he wouldn't have developed the incubators for me to be alive to talk about him dissecting the bodies and taking the money and developing the incubators. That's the positive for you. And you might say, well, sort of. Unfortunately, this is the negative. Amongst everything else he was, going back to the very beginning of this podcast, he was an absolute unbelievable racist. And thought that anybody that was not white was more or less an animal and could be dissected. Thank you very much. But he also believed that the lower orders were almost semi-savage. and that it didn't matter. And actually, if Burke and Hare were bumping off the detritus of Edinburgh, then good, and he would make full use of what they were up to. It's for somebody who was so clever and so learned and actually advanced medical science to be so horrible about other human beings is a really difficult thing to do.
Well, Mary, there you have it, because the gentleman I referenced at the start of the podcast in my introduction, I heard a supporter say quite recently, this gentleman cannot be a racist because he does business in the Caribbean, in Jamaica, in Barbados.
Yeah.
It's much the same.
It's much the same thing, yes.
Idiotic rationale,
yes.
in my opinion.
Knox did advance medical science.
Yes.
But at the expense of the poor and the destitute in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And if he had not been doing what he had been doing, who knows what Burke and Hare would have gone up to. The one good thing about the case was that the Anatomy Act was brought in a few years later to sort out the mess of the fact that everybody had just sort of turned a blind eye to what doctors were doing. Everybody had just turned a blind eye to where they were getting their bodies. So, in a way, Knox was right. He hadn't broken any laws. And if
there
Burke,
it is.
If Burke and Hare had turned up with three bodies in the space of 11 months, I could go with them and say, yes, he didn't know. But 16 bodies, in 16 that Hare admitted to, there might have been more.
There may
we
well
don't
have been
know.
More,
And to turn up with, young women and children at 12 years old and things like that, and, no. Knox knew exactly what he was up to.
Mary, thanks a lot. And I believe that we'll listen back, of course, but I believe we've pulled quite a few threads together there from previous podcasts and previous topics.
Indeed.
Thank you very much for that. That was fascinating. Okay. Bye for now.
Bye for now.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.